again, I just want to say, it's wonderful to be here. As Hannah said, I was recently granted preliminary fellowship by the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association, which basically means I'm approved to be ordained. So we'll take care of that later this year. It has been a long journey. 11 years as of this month. 11 years ago, I started at seminary. Crazy, isn't it? But you know, the real turning point was about 5 or 6 years ago. I was doing ministry at my home congregation, the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Fairfax, and I was enjoying it, but I was also frustrated because I was painfully aware of the fact that I wasn't the minister I wanted to be. I was painfully aware of my shortcomings and how persistent they were. I didn't see myself as a real minister, not the way I saw Mary Catherine Morn, the UCF minister at the time, or Reverend Anya, or Reverend Scott. I just didn't see myself that way. And I found that just very discouraging. But then I had an epiphany. I don't remember how it happened, but suddenly I realized that I couldn't be a minister like Mary Catherine or Reverend Anya or anyone else. As long as I was trying to conform myself to some idealized vision of a minister, I wasn't being myself. And if I wasn't being myself, I couldn't be an authentic minister. I needed to bring my own particular gifts to the ministry along with my own flaws. Yes, I needed to strengthen my skills, and I needed to learn to work around my weaknesses, but I needed to be my authentic self, flaws and all. I called it my ministry of imperfection. I was thinking about this a lot recently. I actually shared this story with my final committee, the MFC. But then I was really thinking about it as we were approaching the new year. Because at this time of year, we have a tendency to think about our lives, to reflect on our lives, and to think about, you know, how we want to grow. And that's only natural. But unfortunately, we hear a lot of messages around New Year resolutions that talk about how we can fix ourselves, about how we can become better versions of ourselves. It makes it sound like personal renovation jobs, doesn't it? A new year, a new me. That's what I want to talk about today. And I want to do it by actually engaging with some of those messages that we hear, by seeing how they hold up under closer scrutiny. Rosalie is actually going to offer some readings for us throughout the sermon, and I'll share some reflections, and we'll see where this takes us. So let's get started with our first reading.
The first reading comes from William Ellery Channing. Channing said, "Our happiness, our eternal happiness, depends on the character we form."
A very short reading. So I want to repeat it because I want to make sure you get that. Our happiness, our eternal happiness, depends on the character we form. Now, it's important to understand the context of that quote. Channing was preaching in the early 1800s, right when the Unitarian movement was just beginning to take shape, and he was actually a big part of that. Channing and other ministers in both the Unitarian and Universalist traditions were actually responding to the Great Awakening. Do you know what the Great Awakening is? So the Great Awakening was this great religious revival movement, especially here in the U.S. And this revival movement was actually based on Calvinism. And the basic message of Calvinism is that as humans, we are depraved creatures, and our only hope is God's saving grace. The depravity of man, that was a central tenet of Calvinism. And Channing and others, especially in the Unitarian movement, rejected that notion of depravity. Channing in particular said that humans had both free will and the great potential to do good. I actually had that written on a flashcard when I was studying for MSc. But we have free will and the great potential to do good. He said our sinfulness is simply based on an imperfect understanding of the moral good. So basically, we might be sinful, but we have the opportunity, we have the ability to form good characters. Now, during the 19th century, this teaching really took hold. Instead of Calvinism's salvation by grace, Unitarianism embraced salvation by character. That became the term, salvation by character. We are all inherently good. We just had to fix ourselves up. That was it. Now, in large part, we've been cured of such naive optimism. And in particular, it was World War I, the Great War, that cured it. You know, up until then, there was still this sort of salvation by character. World War I sort of put a damper on our view of humanity. And so that sort of went underground. And yet that thinking is still there, both in our tradition and in society at large. It's subtle, but it's always present. Salvation by character. For example, there's a wonderful book called On Living by Kerry Egan. Kerry Egan is a hospice chaplain. And in this book, she basically shares what lessons she had learned from patients and lessons that she learned from people who are dying, but that could be of value to people who are living. It's a very powerful book. Here's one of her basic messages. She writes, "There's nothing stopping you from acting with the same urgency the dying feel." Let me repeat that. "There's nothing stopping you from acting with the same urgency the dying feel. Don't put off the work of becoming who you want to be. Waiting will not make it easier, and time is short." Now, that's a powerful statement. I remember when I read it, I immediately posted it on Facebook because I thought, wow, that's moving. But looking at it now, I also hear an echo of that salvation by character. In short, fix yourself now because you don't have much time. So I want to leave that for now, and let's go on to our next reading.
This comes from In the Shelter by Padraig O'Toole. "What do you want most in the world?" a friend asked me once. "To be happy," I said without thinking, surprising myself with the truth. "How about you?" "Oh, to be holy," he said. "Shoot," I thought, assuming I'd gotten it wrong again.
And by the way, in the text, he didn't really say shoot. That was, by the way, here, you got me. So there's actually a lot to unpack here. I love this reading, but the basic tension here is between just wanting to be happy and wanting to be holy. Now, we don't talk a lot about wanting to be holy, you know, not in Unitarian Universalism and not in popular culture, but at least not in traditional terms. What we do hear a lot about is the quest for perfection, the quest for the perfect diet, the perfect exercise routine, the perfect body, the quest to always be mindful, to be centered, to always be in control. Do you know what I mean? Do you know those messages? You see them on the magazine covers? You see them on Facebook? You hear them on the radio? Actually, my wife and I, we don't watch much TV. We watch most things, you know, through Netflix or Amazon. But every once in a while we watch TV, and I am stunned by the number of commercials where the basic message is, we got what can fix you. You know, we got it. You know, here's this new exercise machine. We're going to take care of you. It's this quest for perfection. It's really a secular version of holiness. And we hear about it everywhere, especially this time of year. And that was the trap I'd fallen into at UCF. I wanted to be the perfect minister. And there was nothing authentic about that. We idolize perfection. And we even idolize perfection when it comes to happiness. We feel like a failure if we're out of sorts, or if we're depressed, or if we're angry. As if happiness somehow excludes the messiness of our lives. And I don't think that's the kind of happiness that Padraig is talking about. Now, Padraig is a poet and theologian. He does conflict mediation in his native Ireland. And he's gay, which for many years put him at odds with his religious beliefs. He was raised Catholic and with his culture. In his book, he says that while he is very religious, for a long time he did not associate religion with happiness. Instead, religion seemed to be more about effort and more about feeling guilty and burdened, about aspiring to holiness or to perfection. He sensed that happiness was something else. It was about releasing guilt. That it was about releasing burdens. It was about releasing the idea of holiness and just being fully alive. Not holy, not perfect, but fully alive. That's the challenge for us, I think. How can we be fully alive in the absence of perfection? How can we be fully alive when we don't have the perfect body? How can we be fully alive when we're angry or depressed, when we don't measure up to our own expectations or the expectations of others? How can we do that? Let's hear our next reading.
The Guest House by Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.
Welcome and entertain them all. That's hard, isn't it? Rumi says, welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. And he says, the dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes. It's hard because these are the very emotions and experiences that seem like obstacles to our happiness. But that's not really the case as Rumi sees it, because these emotions and experiences are inevitable. There's no avoiding them. They show up whether we invite them or not. So what does it mean to invite them in, and how can we be grateful? When we invite these difficult emotions and experiences, we open ourselves to working with them. We open ourselves to learning from them. That's the key to Rumi's poem, that we can learn from everything we experience. It's all grist for the mill. That's another one of the teachings of Ram Dass. Ram Dass taught that whenever we find ourselves struggling with emotions or experiences, that's a sign of how we might want to grow. That's a sign of the work that we might want to do. But as Ram Dass said it, it's not about becoming some idealized version of ourselves. It's not about a new year, a new me. Instead, It's about growing in response to the circumstances of our lives. That's a subtle but important distinction. The question is not, how do I become a better person? The question is, how do I evolve as a person to meet the challenges of my life? Like Rumi, Ram Dass says that everything in our lives is a vehicle for our transformation. Everything in our lives is a vehicle for our transformation. I understood this teaching in a new way back in March when I read an interview with Joe Henry, who's a singer I very much like. Several months earlier, in November last 2018, he had been diagnosed with a very serious illness and was expecting to die. In this interview in March, he said that at first when he got the diagnosis, he felt completely undone. It was just what he just wasn't expecting it, and it's like it threw everything off. But at some point, he had an epiphany. He realized that his illness was not an obstacle on his life journey. It was the journey. It was the journey. Rumi invites us to embrace life in a similar way. Not to try becoming better people. Not to pursue some elusive goal of perfection. But to live fully whatever life brings us. I'd like to close by rereading the poem that Rosalie read earlier, Love After Love. The time will come when with elation you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome. And say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. May it be so.